Deb Akhil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, is our guest, talking about things that have been in the news over the past week here. Kia joins us from LA. And Kia, before we get back to stories here, I guess I want to find out your own path to Tinseltown and to Courier Newsroom. Let the folks know how you got to be who you are, what you are, where you are.
Sure. It's a fun but strange path.
I got 14 minutes till break, so you just go ahead and
I'll keep it to the short version. But basically, I came to journalism later in my career. It was my second profession, so to speak. I spent my first few years out of college in the entertainment industry, unfortunately, but. I learned a lot from it, and I was a researcher for a writer and an author. So I learned a lot of the skills that helped me as I've become a reporter. So I did that for a few years and then sort of segued into journalism here at Courier. And it's a strange story. I never thought about it. I wrote for my high school newspaper for a semester and hated it. So I never really thought I'd be a reporter, but it's something I've come to love. And just really value that I get to do it for a living.
Well, here's how much we value your research. By and large, at Courier Newsroom, Up North News included, and I know most people don't count words, but you'll get a feel for where I'm going on this. A lot of our stories, like in the newsletter, you know, they're about each story is about 300 words or so. In a social media post, you don't really want to go over, say, 250 words. For our website articles, those can be, you know, maybe 600 to 800 words or so. Kia will turn in one that's 2,500 words, and you won't want to cut a single thing because of the research that he's put into it to explain, you know, any given thing. You one of the first ones you did, I remember, was it for the Keystone, and it was, how do I explain this? It was. How people with disabilities were affected by this policy or that policy. I mean, it was great, and I wish we could have done a Wisconsin version of it. So we really appreciate the work that you do for us. So as you've been researching some of the things that, frankly, are only get headline treatment otherwise, I'll just refer back to our interview with Senator Tammy Baldwin in our first hour. You know, even with this, as much time together as we had, we couldn't really get into a lot of details on a couple of big things that have come through Congress. And let's start with the one that is getting most of the attention right now, because it is probably, you know, President Joe Biden's, you know, last kick at the can in terms of a broad domestic policy agenda. And it has the name the Inflation Reduction Act. What is it, and you know, where are we at with its current status in the land of Manchin and Sinema?
Yeah, so it is a bill that was put together by Joe Manchin, Senator of West Virginia, and Charles Schumer, the Democratic Senate leader. It effectively is a dual climate healthcare bill that is also reduces the deficit and is funded by tax increases on corporations and the rich. So it's a much smaller, more focused agenda than, you know, Democrats were trying to pass last year, the one that fell apart, unfortunately. But this is a brand new bill that would effectively, you know, keep, you know, last year they lowered Affordable Care Act premiums through the American Rescue Plan dramatically, helping tens of thousands of people in Wisconsin. Actually, I believe it's hundreds of thousands. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it reduced those premiums by giving working class people basically subsidies to afford the cost of healthcare. And we've seen a whole lot more people sign up for healthcare through the marketplace during that time. But that is set to expire, those subsidies, at the end of this year. So the bill would first off extend those for 3 years through 2025, meaning, again, tens of thousands of people would keep their health care, and hundreds of thousands in Wisconsin, I'm talking alone, would have cheaper health care. It also allows Medicare to negotiate drug prices for a certain amount of drugs starting in 2026, which would effectively reduce spending on prescriptions for ordinary Americans and Wisconsinites by a fairly dramatic amount for those drugs. They have not figured out which ones those are yet, but it'll be very common drugs. And it also, and this is a big thing for seniors, is it would cap how much they spend on prescriptions to $2,000 a year. And that would be beginning in 2025. So that's the healthcare stuff. And then the climate stuff is largely incentives for public and private utilities and companies to transition to solar, wind, and other forms of renewable away from fossil fuels that are causing, you know, climate change and the floods and droughts and fires that we see all across the country and the world. Mm-hmm. It also incentivizes, you know, buying electric vehicles, new or used, by helping giving, you know, when you go to, like, let's say the car dealership, you'd get $7,500 back for a new electric vehicle. It would essentially slash $7,500 from the price, and $4,500 for a used car. And then the tax stuff effectively would adjust some loopholes that, you know, Wall Street exploits, and set a corporate minimum tax, because there's all these companies that, since the Trump tax cuts, get to avoid basically paying what they should be paying in corporate taxes. And this bill would, to some extent, fix that. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
And now, because Manchin is working with Schumer on it, and Manchin had been the impediment to the president's Build Back Better package, the more expansive proposals that he had, Manchin is not the rate limiting factor at this point. Now it's the other, Democrat, we think, Kristen Sinema from Arizona. Yep. And last I heard, still not saying much. So we still don't know if she's on board or if she's going to Manchin this thing.
Yeah, she's been pretty quiet. I know over the last day or so, there's been little drips of reporting suggesting she has a couple quibbles with it. You know, she seems to want to adjust some of the tax reform. Seems to be her hobby horse, which is strange for a former Green Party activist to be that focused on, you know, helping private equity companies pay less in taxes.
Right. But
that's apparently what she's doing. She also wants to put some more money for drought resiliency in Arizona, which that's something that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Arizona's 115 degrees there with shocking regularity. So drought is an issue. But beyond that, we don't really know a lot about where she stands.
And as has happened enough with both of them, have zero optimism, which is not the same as pessimism, but it's, you know, I'm going to believe it when the vote is cast. And I think that's where a lot of us are. Talking to Tammy Baldwin, she's eager to head off on her August recess, like a lot of members of Congress, and, you know, just don't know if they're going to be held hostage by one single member, and they can do that. Another piece of legislation, somewhat related in terms of providing incentives for an industry, is the CHIPS Act. Has nothing to do with the snack food and everything to do with the technology that we need for everything from, you know, the computers we are zooming on right now to much more. What is the CHIPS Act about?
Yeah, so the CHIPS Act effectively, you know, subsidizes and incentivizes the creation of these, you know, plants, like production plants, to produce microchips. And microchips, a year ago wouldn't have known what that is. But effectively, if you've noticed in the last, you know, year and a half that the price of a used car has like surged, that the price of, you know, medical, or that there's shortages in medical equipment, or the prices of that have gone up, or, you know, there's been shortages in iPhones, like these chips are in all of those devices. And the vast majority, I don't have the exact percentages, but it's like upwards of 80%, I believe, are produced in Taiwan. And so that means that during the pandemic, there's been all these supply chain issues on every sort of, you know, technology or product all around the world, especially coming out of China and, you know, Taiwan. And so that's created these shortages during the pandemic. And the CHIPS Act aims to prevent that from happening again. Effectively, it will incentivize technology companies to create these chips domestically, so that there's not supply chain issues in the future. And it also, so that, you know, the US can be more economically self-sufficient and secure. These chips are also involved in, you know, certain national security, you know, production things. I'm not an expert on defense, unfortunately, but it is critical for that. We've seen a lot of senators talk about that. And so it's, you know, it's economic, it's it will create some jobs, and it invests also about $100 billion in technological development and innovation. And that's not just chips, that's everything. So it's a domestic spending bill to boost manufacturing in the US.
It seems like with some other economic sectors, it seems to be a case where enough Americans finally realized, oh, I knew we sent some production overseas. I didn't realize we had virtually all of it there. And, you know, if it got cut off tomorrow, we would be absolutely, you know, helpless and would have to start an entire industrial sector from scratch. And it's a shame that it took a pandemic to disrupt supplies to this point to get some work done. But, you know, maybe that's what it takes. And another thing that has taken far too long is something that deals with veterans' health, those who are exposed to toxic burn pits, and something that, as we've explained on this show a couple of times and over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, this is something that, you know, people like Senator Ron Johnson can claim they voted for it in the end, but, you know, only after they tried to kill it, which, again, seems inexplicable given what we thought we'd learned about how we treat our veterans coming home from Vietnam who were exposed to Agent Orange. So tell folks what the hiccup was and how we eventually, apparently, hopefully, are getting that done.
Yeah, so the PACT Act is this bill. You know, Senator Baldwin was a huge supporter of it. Effectively, you know, it'll make it easier for veterans to get healthcare benefits after they've been exposed to, you know, toxic burn pits, which, you know, were used in Iraq and Afghanistan to get rid of, you know, waste and paints and metals. And, you know, a lot of veterans inhaled this and it's made them sick. It's given them cancer. So the bill assumes that those illnesses are tied to the burn pits and effectively removes barriers to getting care. And so this bill passed the Senate, I believe it was last month, or maybe it was late June. Yeah. The months have all coalesced.
Time means nothing now. Yeah, it's true.
So the bill passed in June. There was some, you know, hiccup with the actual language of the bill, so they had to hold another vote. And then that vote happened hours after Manchin, you know, announced this deal. And so Republicans effectively threw a hissy fit and killed the bill for last week because they were pissed and they felt like they'd been had. Thankfully, there was a ton of public backlash and pressure, and they ended up passing the bill this week, and it will head to Biden's desk now because it's cleared the House as well.
Yeah, and again, there was that, when we talk about voting for it or against it, before for it, we're talking about whether to, you know, remove the threat of a filibuster, which, you know, again, they can technically say, you know, we weren't voting against the bill, we just wanted debate to continue. You know, people don't. It's just, you're not fooling anybody. Keeva Keel is our guest. We will talk more about what's happening on the national political scene and its impact for Wisconsin coming up after the break. You're up north.